across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
Welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone. I'm the officer of the deck today. We've got some great programs for you. I think you'll find very interesting. We always want to remind you, you can find more about Veterans Radio at its Facebook site or at the web. VeteransRadio.org is our new URL, VeteransRadio.org, where we're on the web 24/7. You can find a lot of our podcasts there as well. We post new ones every Tuesday, so you can get a new story, a new interview, something you didn't know before by going to VeteransRadio.org. And before we get started, we want to thank our sponsors. First up, we want to thank National Veteran Business Development Council, NVBDC.org. It was established to certify both service-disabled and veteran-owned businesses. You'll find out how they can help your business by going to NVBDC.org. We want to thank Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans fights for veterans' disability rights all across the nation. You can reach them at 800-693-4800 or on the web at legalhelpforveterans.com. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Carrie Filippetti. She is the executive director of the Vandenberg Coalition, which we're going to talk about. But she also was involved in writing a op-ed piece for the Washington Examiner, which is where I saw it earlier, about how civics education maybe could help solve the military recruitment crisis. So you'll want to listen to her here. Carrie, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you so much for having me, Jim. Excited to be here.
Well, you have a very interesting career path out of the University of Virginia with your degree and then on to work at the United Nations as a senior policy advisor for the United States mission. You advised then Ambassador Nikki Haley on issues related to counterterrorism in the Middle East and things in the Western Hemisphere. You've done work for the State Department in a lot of things down south, Venezuela, for example, and now find yourself as the executive director of the Vandenberg Coalition. Can you tell us a little bit about the Vandenberg Coalition?
Sure, I'd be happy to. And I've been very fortunate to have great mentors like Ambassador Haley and others in the last administration that helped establish my career path. So the Vandenberg Coalition, we started it in 2021. I was just leaving the Trump administration and was concerned by what I was seeing as this rise in a sentiment of American retreat, the sense that America is no longer a powerful nation and should not seek to promote its interests and its values around the world. And as someone who grew up on the outskirts of New York City, you know, on 9/11, I'm very much aware that no matter how much we want to retreat from the world, our enemies are going to try to attack us, and it's going to cost far more American lives if we wait for that than if we address the threats in smaller ways before they get to our borders. So that was generally the impetus for the coalition. We wanted to create a network of conservative thought leaders, people who had served in government before, who could really create a new foreign policy for 2023 and going forward, not looking back at what previous presidents did, not saying everything that Reagan did was right or Bush did was right or Trump did was right, but really recognizing that we're in a completely different threat environment than we've ever faced before, and how do we appropriately confront that threat environment using both the new opportunities that technology provides us as well as the new challenges and obstacles that we have with things like the rise of communist China. So the coalition exists to push for that kind of an agenda, to push for an American people first foreign policy that better serves American interests and promotes American prosperity, American freedom, and American strength.
Well, I have to admit that I didn't know who Senator Vandenberg was when I started researching. Hey, how do I talk to the author of this interesting idea? Only to learn that Arthur Vandenberg, who died in 1951, was a senator from my home state here in Michigan, and that he studied law at the University of Michigan, but made his mark in journalism before going on to the United States Senate. Tell us a little bit about Arthur Vandenberg and why that became the name of the coalition.
Absolutely, and it's not unusual. I mean, I'll be honest with you, when we started this group and we're trying to come up with the best name for it, I also was not familiar with Arthur Vandenberg up until, you know, meeting with some folks and then commending him to me. So as you mentioned, Arthur Vandenberg was a senator from Michigan. He served from 1928 until 1951, which is, of course, a very pivotal moment for American foreign policy. He was a true conservative, a true Republican, and for much of his life as a political leader, he was an isolationist. And then Pearl Harbor happened, and he had what is known as this sort of massive public conversion, the quote, speech heard round the world, where he subsequently said that our oceans have ceased to be moats, which automatically protect our ramparts, essentially acknowledging that no matter what we want here, no matter how much we want to avoid war, we have enemies and they are going to try to attack us unless we put up stronger defenses. And he ultimately became the chief architect for some of the most sort of modern forms of conservative foreign policy. So he was the chief legislative architect of the Marshall Plan, of NATO, of the UN and the Truman Doctrine. And he really established what it means to be a Republican leading in foreign policy in that post-World War era, and really set the stage for uniting conservatives around a strong foreign policy. So what we appreciated about him and why we chose his name is because he understood what it was like to be an isolationist. He understood why he needed to shift from that man and the kinds of threats that were in front of him. He remained true to his conservative roots, but at the same time was willing to work across the aisle to do what was best for the United States. And those are things that we all try to bring into the Vandenberg Coalition. So I'm hoping that part of what we do can help spread the word about this fantastic Michigan senator who really had an outsized influence on conservative foreign policy and American foreign policy, and yet very few people are familiar with his story.
Well, and I would encourage anybody who is interested in that story or the history, if you will, go to VandenbergCoalition.org, go to the About Us tab, and check down to who is Arthur Vandenberg. There's a nice explanation of all this, including the speech heard around the world after Pearl Harbor and sort of how he converted from, hey, United States, be an isolationist, just worry about your own area, to this recognition that, hey, we have an internationalism here. We have to deal with the whole world. So very interesting, and I'd encourage people to look at it, Carrie. But before we lose too much more time, I want to come back to what caught my attention, which was your piece on Restoring America about, quote, how civics education can help solve the military recruitment crisis. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, as somebody who works in national security, obviously, you know, having a declining military capacity is central to many of my conversations. And of course, many of your listeners will know that the United States is experiencing one of the most significant recruitment crises, and by the way, retention crises that it has seen since the end of the draft. So the question is, what's spurring that forward? And there's a few different things. One thing is just, you know, medical records are now online. So while people in the past would be able to join the military and maybe they wouldn't divulge that they had, you know, ADD or they broke some bone at some point, now it's all online. And so the military has access to it. So some of those things need to be updated. Other things are just the physical fitness of our youth. So the stats that we've seen from 2020 suggest that only about 23% of Americans between the ages of 17 to 24 are even eligible for military service. And when you think about that number, then the question is, how many of those want to serve? And that's where civic education really does play a significant role, because civics is all about teaching people about why our country was created, what we stand for, what our principles are, and why it's so important to preserve those things and fight for what it means to be an American and understand what it means to be an American and to integrate into America if you are, you know, immigrating here from another country. And so I think it makes sense that we're seeing a decline in interest in the military. You know, in the last year, in 2023, the only branches that met their recruitment targets were the Marine Corps and the Space Force. And you had about a 41,000 person shortfall in the Army, Navy, and Air Force. And so it's critically important that people understand why service matters so much. And I think that's where there's really been this gap. Throughout the last few decades, we've seen declining civic education in universities, declining civic education in K-12. Nobody is being taught why being an American matters and the good that it does for the world. And then therefore, why would anybody want to serve? So I think making sure that people are educated in those things is critical to inspiring them to want to serve their country, whether it's in the military or, frankly, whether it's through a corporation that can bring economic benefit back to the United States as well.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting thought here, because this recruiting and retention problem is ultimately a national security problem. We've been talking about it with a lot of different thought leaders and writers and military men and women on Veterans Radio. And we're talking to Carrie Filippetti, who's the executive director of the Vandenberg Coalition. And I think some of this is related to, well, you know, that 1% of the population or less takes care of us. I don't have to involve my family. Whereas during World War II, certainly it was every family during the Vietnam draft. Because of the draft, it became almost every family. So we've really gone generations now where we think, well, we don't think about it. Somebody else takes care of it for us. And people aren't taught. And this is the, you know, I grabbed the yellow marker when I read this line that you guys wrote, which is, if people are not taught why their country is worth defending, they are less inclined to serve in the military or contribute their skills to its success. It's really that simple, isn't it?
I think it is. I mean, again, what people are being taught today in schools, particularly universities, but even at the K-12 level now, is that America is bad, that America has a scary, problematic history. And rather than reading America through the lens of this, what Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. called the promissory note, right, this idea that we would always seek to be a more perfect union, instead of understanding that as the root of what it means to be an American, people are trying to say that what it means to be an American are, you know, accepting and being, you know, racist or being opposed to other cultures. And that's not at all what it is about. That's not what it has been about. And I think there's a way of teaching the reality of, you know, American history with a very clear understanding of what a beautiful system the United States has created and how different and unique it is among all of the nations in the world. There used to be institutions that would do these. You know, I was a Girl Scout. I'm sure many of your listeners were Boy Scouts. And by the way, the correlation between those who are Eagle Scouts and those who serve in the military or do exceptional things is unbelievable.
Absolutely, yep.
So, and we no longer have an emphasis on those sort of civics-minded organizations. We don't teach it in schools anymore. We don't teach the Pledge of Allegiance anymore. We don't teach the founding documents anymore. And giving people the tools to understand how the United States has grown and developed, if you really understand our history, you will be inspired to serve this country, whether it is through the military or some other capacity if for whatever reason you don't meet the fitness requirements. But people today are just not excited to be American. People today don't think that their children are going to have a better future than they will. So this is all part of this broader cultural decline and cultural malaise where we just no longer have confidence in the United States anymore. So why would somebody young decide to put their life on the line for the country? And that's where civics education, I think, can make a significant difference.
Yeah, we don't teach history at all. And the little bit we do teach is often slanted against this idea of why your country is worth defending. You had a co-author on the article, Hans Zeiger, I believe, from the Jack Miller Center. Can you tell us a little bit about that relationship?
Sure. Hans is the leader of the Jack Miller Center, which is a fantastic organization that builds and sustains a higher education community that's focused on the teaching of civic education. So they create resources and teacher education for those individuals who will be teaching others about what it means to be an American. So they're very much involved in this, what they call the civic knowledge crisis. They focus on teaching about the American political tradition. They host a summit on civics education and have something called the Constitution Day Initiative, which I think would be fantastic for. I'm trying to get more people to celebrate Constitution Day, which is September 17th, which marks the signing of the U.S. Constitution. They work very, very hard on trying to promote civics education and have been involved in this space for many, many years, a lot longer than I have. So Hans is a brilliant leader of this organization and also the co-author of this op-ed.
So here becomes the important question. Okay, guys like me read this and said, that's a really good idea. How has it been received by the educational world, though? You're saying, hey, we have to teach this down in the lower grades. Any feedback from the educational world yet?
You know, I think there is this recognition, and it's growing as we start to see how some of these initiatives that were intended to sort of recognize issues within the United States, things like the, you know, DEI initiatives and so on. Lately, there's been a lot of pushback against those things as we're seeing it play out, you know, with respect to the crisis in the Middle East and how it seems people are unable to kind of differentiate good versus evil at this stage. And so the education space, I think, is ripe for change. And now is the moment for us to focus on this aspect, regardless of your beliefs on, DEI or other things. I think civics education is a central pillar of making good citizens that want to contribute. So far, we've started to get a little bit more interest as that community, the educational community, is opening itself up to recognizing, you know, maybe we've made some mistakes and seeing how different leaders of universities are being forced out because of those mistakes. So I'm hoping that now is really the moment, but it does require people like you, people like your viewers, people like me, as we, you know, if we have children, to push for civics education there, to try to get our children enrolled in things like, you know, the Scouts programs, to be involved as community leaders, because those are the types of people that will be inspired to want to serve the country as well. So there's a lot that we can be doing at the local level. And, you know, as a conservative, I always believe that it starts local. So that would be my advice, is to work as hard as you can with your own children within your own school districts, pushing for small things that can get people acquainted with the founding documents, acquainted with, the Federalist Papers and the Constitution and things like that, and celebrating Constitution Day and making it a fun event that people are excited to participate in when they're younger. And then they'll ask the question of, well, what does this really mean as they start to get older? And that's a great teaching moment.
Yeah, it really is a grassroots kind of thing to get civics reinstalled the right way back into the school system, into the educational system. And if you can't get it in your school system, if you're a parent or a grandparent, are there resources out there that should be being used with the children in their homes?
Yeah, well, I first of all, yes. I think there's always ways that you can do this just in your own home. If you have access to a constitution, if you have access to any of the founding documents, which, by the way, you can find for free online as well, reading through those with your children and just asking questions, you know, why was it done this way? What were the other ways that this could have been done? What does this, how can you sort of reflect this same principle in your own life? I think the best we can do is get back to those basics, get back to, you know, those founding documents are the absolute best resource that we have. You don't have to be a law school, you know, student or a law professor. I think just understanding where we come from and engaging in your community are the two best ways that you can do that.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of ways, and it does start at that very ground level, whether you can move it into the school systems or make sure you're at least doing it at home, because people really do need to understand why their country is worth defending. That's the long-term solution to the recruiting and retention issue. And we're talking to Kerry Philip Petty, who is the executive director of the Vandenberg Coalition. You have an interesting area in which you volunteer that I want to bring up. So you are an EMT with your local fire department.
Well, again, this goes back to the idea of service. I will actually say part of that came from I tried to join the Marine Corps, and unfortunately are among those Americans who are unqualified for, in my case, a medical reason. And so I tried to join in 2016 and was politely told, you know, they'd love to have me, but thanks, but no thanks. And so I wanted to find another way to serve my country. And serving as an EMT, I served throughout the entirety of the pandemic, was a great way for me to focus on, again, bettering my community, being of service to those around me. So I've really enjoyed it. And it also has a little bit of that, you know, military hierarchy to it, which I think I was looking for as well.
Well, importantly, I think our Veteran Radio listeners like to know that the people that they're talking or hearing about here on Veterans Radio either have served or understand the value of service, or are displaying that sort of, hey, I'm gonna serve my community, and that's great. Congratulations on that EMT work. If people want to know more about the Vandenberg Coalition, how do they find that out?
Yeah, well, you were great in giving your listeners the website address. So it's VandenbergCoalition.org, and you can find out more about what we do and subscribe to our weekly newsletter, which is called Beyond the Water's Edge. I also recommend a fantastic book if you want to learn more about the senator himself. It's called Arthur Vandenberg, The Man in the Middle of the American Century, and it's by someone named Hank Meyer, M-E-I-J-E-R, which is a fantastic resource into understanding how American foreign policy was shaped. And there's a big piece of civics education as to why Vandenberg himself was inspired to serve. And then lastly, I would just also encourage your listeners to check out the Jack Miller Center, which is jackmillercenter.org, where you can read more about Hans and his organization, which focuses every day on trying to create a strong America based on, you know, teaching about our founding principles.
Well, thanks for doing the Jack Miller Center. I was going to give that website as well, jackmillercenter.org. And Hans is, I think he's a member of the, I had it here, Air National Guard. So again, somebody who is walking the talk, and that's something our Veteran Radio listeners really, really appreciate. Kerry, we appreciate the time that you've given to Veterans Radio today, and keep pressing these good ideas, and we'll keep promoting them for you.
Well, thanks so much, and many thanks to you and all your listeners for everything that you do every day to promote a strong America. It's what our success is based on, so thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows
by visiting us at veteransradio.org. That's veteransradio.org.
And until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans' Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
We again want to thank our national sponsors, the National Veterans Business Development Council, NVBDC.org, VA Ann Arbor Health Care System, the Vietnam Veterans of America Charles S. Kettles Chapter, Ann Arbor, Michigan, VFW Graf O'Hara Post 423 in Ann Arbor, and the American Legion Prescorn Post 46, also in Ann Arbor. We appreciate all your support. You can go to veteransradio.net. Click on the sponsor level and continue to support keeping Veterans Radio on the air. And until next time, you are dismissed.